Welcome to Tales from the Doghouse, Separation Anxiety Explained. I'm Ness Jones, and I'm from Separation Anxiety and Dogs Decoded, based in Australia. And with me today is...
me! It's Sarah McLaren from the UK, from Separation Anxiety Solutions, and with me also is...
hey, it's Stacey Bell in the US with Focused Fun. Today we have an awesome episode for you all about sleep. Beth, I'm just going to limit it to that because you never know where we're going to go with things. So,
I like this topic. I quite like sleeping.
Yeah.
In fact, it's 5:30 a.m. in the morning here and I just woke up.
It's 8:30 p.m. here and I'd quite like to go to bed.
Like right in the middle of the day for me, so I'm like, I'm all right.
You could have an afternoon nap.
Mm-hmm. I'm not really good at naps. I always feel like I've been, I think my husband has this whole rule about like 20 minute naps, like you should only take a 20 minute nap, which then like it takes me 20 minutes to fall asleep, so what's the point? Yeah. But for him, he can like fall asleep instantly and he sets his alarm for a half an hour because that gives him time to fall asleep. And then, you know, but if I take a nap, like I am down and then I wake up and I feel all groggy. It's no good.
Yeah, I don't like that feeling when you wake up.
No, I'm a power napper. I get where your husband goes. I can do that. All done and dusted within half an hour. I'm back up again and bouncing about.
Yeah.
So what are we talking about sleep, Stacey, apart from us sleeping?
Well, I think I get a lot of questions about puppies and sleep, or does it affect separation anxiety if the dog sleeps in your bed? And so I thought we'd cover kind of those topics and then whatever else we could think of.
You know, we could just fast track this episode because I wrote a blog on this.
Did you?
Yeah.
Should we just stop now then?
In September last year. In September last year. You know, that's all they have to do is read the blog. And yeah, we can finish now and I can go back to bed and go back to sleep.
Aren't we so entertaining though that we would be worth interacting with at 5:30 in the morning?
Oh, I suppose so. But yeah, seriously, if anybody wants to read the blog, it's on my website, which is Ruff, IFF Diamonds Dog Services.
I kind of feel like I want to go.
Okay.
All right. Ruff.
No, you don't have to get on. You don't have to read it.
You're going to read it out. Just read it out loud, Stacey. We'll just sit back.
Well, I mean, since Ness wrote it, don't you think that it would be better if she read it with her own voice?
You don't know. Nobody needs to read it.
It'd be like an Audible book.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
right.
Audible.
Uh-huh.
And we could charge everybody $7.99 to listen to it.
Okay, so what is your response to somebody who asks us if it's okay if their dog sleeps in their room or on their bed?
Well, I think the actual question is, will it give my dogs separation anxiety? That's the one I get asked.
Yeah. So what is your response to that question?
What? Sorry, I just fell asleep. Sorry, I just... oh, that was pathetic. Sorry.
Ness, you're in rare form.
Oh dear. I'm just like kind of delirious for having been up so early.
Yeah.
It's still pitch black outside. I just want you guys to know how dedicated I am to this.
You are better,
podcast.
Very...
The short answer is it won't create separation anxiety. Mm-mm.
Yeah. It's one of those things, though, isn't it, that you kind of get phrased in that way where people say to you, oh, I let my dog sleep on the bed, is it going to make them worse? Seems to get phrased that way a lot, with a little guilty look and a kind of hang dog expression.
But you know why they have, sorry,
go on.
No, I was just going to say, but you know why they get that guilty expression? It's because everybody else is telling them, oh, you shouldn't do that, and making them feel bad about it.
And it's our job to make them feel good about it. It's fine, let your dog sleep on the bed if you want them to.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's the thing, isn't it? I have lots of thoughts here, but one of them is that we always have to be balancing what the dog's needs are with what the pet parents' needs are, right? Mm-hmm. Because for some people who are super light sleepers, having a dog in the bed with them could be really disruptive.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to make sure that the pet parents are getting sleep too. So I think that's something to consider. It's not for everybody, but you know, if your dog has trouble sleeping away from you and you can't tolerate the dog in your bed, then what's the next step? Can the dog sleep on their own bed on the floor in your room, you know, as a second option? I know, especially with puppies, it can be tough to have them apart from you, or for them to be apart from you. So that is something to consider with puppies too, especially since dogs are kind of social sleepers there. So
yeah. And it's a quite big thing, isn't it? They've just come away from mommy, and maybe a family or wherever, and siblings and everything. And then suddenly they've gone from an entire family setup to being often in a crate in a kitchen all on their own with a clock or a blanket that's, you know, that people think is, or they've been told that will help. And you know, when you're teeny tiny and all alone and afraid, and no amount of jumpers or clocks are going to help with that, are they?
Right.
They need to be with us. I think it's a bit of a welfare issue to be left on their own in the kitchen. I think they need to be near us, at least if you can't have them, you know, in the bed, then at least next to it or close to you.
Well, and like we talked about last week, you know, if your goal is to eventually have them sleep on their own, or if your goal is for them to be more quote unquote independent, the best way to foster that is to help them feel safe first, and then independence will grow out of that. But independence doesn't grow out of being scared and alone and cold, you know.
I guess the common belief is that they will get used to it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thinking behind it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And for some more resilient dogs, or dogs that don't have the propensity for separation anxiety, you know, some dogs will get used to it. But for the dogs that are more, I mean, I guess, like, if you're listening to this podcast, it's because you're worried that your dog has separation anxiety, right? Or you're trying to guard against your dog developing that. So in those cases, I would definitely start with the puppy in your room, or a new dog. If it's a foster dog or a dog that you've recently adopted, start with them in your room if you can.
Yeah, because if you do that separating in the kitchen thing, you could actually have the opposite effect to what you're trying to avoid. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which is scary.
And so what about the people who say, okay, that's fine, the dog can start in my room, but I really want to quickly transfer them out of the room as soon as possible. What do y'all suggest there?
Y'all. I cannot say that word, y'all. what do we suggest? Just to gradually move it out. Mm-hmm. I know you just said quickly, but maybe you have to do it at the dog's level. So,
right.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's all about the same thing that we would say for the home alone training, isn't it? That sometimes the fastest way to do it is to go slowly, right? Because if you're pushing the dog, then they're experiencing fear or anxiety, and that's not really going to help them to learn that it's safe.
No.
Did you know, according to the Mayo Clinic, and people can read this on my blog that I wrote, but the Mayo Clinic carried out a study, and that more than half of pet owners, and pet would include cats and other animals, I guess, snakes, allow their pets to sleep in their bedrooms.
Oh, actually, we've got a snake in the bedroom.
You have a snake?
Yeah, we've got a snake in the bedroom, although she's in the vivarium. She's not in the bed.
Have you got a snake?
Yeah, huh?
Let me see her.
We're in the wrong room.
Well, how about you post a photo and we can put it on our social media and just say,
all right, then.
Sarah has a snake in her bedroom because she doesn't want it to get separation anxiety.
No, she's not. I don't think she'd care she would care because she wouldn't get fed, but I don't think she'd even notice if I wasn't there. She's a royal python.
Do you feed her live snakes?
She can't feed live them live. No, it's illegal to feed live food.
Is it?
Yeah. I don't know if it is where you are, but it definitely is here.
I never would have figured you for a snake person.
Yeah, this is blowing my mind, Sarah.
Yeah.
Really blowing my mind.
She's called Biscuit.
Biscuit?
Biscuit.
Yeah. Why is she called Biscuit?
Because when we first got her, she was in my hand in a circle and she looked like a biscuit.
Oh, and what sort of snake is it?
She's a royal python.
A royal python.
Got sidetracked now, haven't we?
Yeah, I have no words. I thought I knew you.
Same, yeah. Same.
You say I got nothing. Wow. Gosh.
Wow.
The week she escaped. And she got out of there's air vents in the back of the vivarium, and she managed to pull one of the air vents out and got out. And when I went in, I was like looking in the vivarium going, how, she's like 6 foot. It's like, how can I not see her? In there? Yeah. And then I realized I could see her head poking out of the top over the top of the vivarium. And I was like,
what if she went and got Ernie's and had a slap?
She won't get Ernie.
Why not? She's 6 foot. Surely she could easily swallow him.
Yeah, I don't know if you've ever seen royal pythons, but they're like the fat snakes, but they've only got little heads.
Oh,
so she would seriously struggle with Ernie.
So she couldn't dislocate a jaw and gobble them up.
But she can open it big, but not that size. She's you know, much smaller animals than that.
Oh, because we get the carpet pythons over here and they could eat Ernie, definitely.
Oh yeah. I mean, they're like huge. She's quite, you know, she's little in comparison to anything that you get out there. No.
Wow.
No risk to Ernie. But yeah, she got out a couple of times.
But couldn't she strangle him, like wrap around him or something?
I've not really thought about it. I mean, she's pretty strong, but I don't know really. Anyway, she was on the top of the vivarium. She didn't come down because I found her. I was like, oh, what are you doing up there? She was like, just hissing around, Mom, having a good old time.
Does she like to be handled?
Yeah, she's fine.
Wow.
She says it's very rare that they kill humans, royal pythons. But it's not unheard of.
It's not unheard of.
It says it's not unheard of. So,
well, Stacey, I think you should not be saying this to Sarah. You will be giving her nightmares, not sweet dreams, when she's sleeping.
I'm just saying she's sleeping in your room and she knows how to get out.
No, not now. We've fixed all the vents now and put screws in, so she can't unscrew them. She was managing to get the tape off that we had, but she can't get the screws out, so we're all right. She hasn't learned how to use a screwdriver yet, so we're pretty safe.
Give her time, yeah. Sarah.
So yeah. But anyway, speaking about pets in the bedroom, there's one.
Yes, that's really exciting to know about you.
Well, of the pets in the bedroom, 20% of pet owners described the pets as disruptive, but 41% perceived their pets as unobtrusive and even beneficial to sleep. Now, this is important. I thought I would share this with you. Did you know also that having a pet in the bedroom can lower your blood pressure and help you feel calmer? And as we know, with separation anxiety, what keeps our clients up at night? Stress about their dogs having separation anxiety. So if they actually let their dogs sleep with them, it will help lower their stress and make them feel calmer. How about that? That's good logic, isn't it?
They definitely get a better night's sleep if they haven't got a dog in the kitchen yelling its head.
Howling.
Yeah.
Having pets with you can help you feel safe and comfortable and also help diminish nightmares, apart from snakes. If you've got snakes, it can escape their velariums or fecariums or whatever the hell it's called. Whatever. If the snake can escape, then you might have a nightmare. This is because sleeping with your dog may release oxytocin, meaning you are likely to have a deeper sleep.
Your dog sleep with you?
Yeah.
Rowan sleeps in our room, but not in our bed. I would let him sleep in the bed, but Jim is not a big fan, and he's kind of big, so.
Yeah, I'm going to say he's not a little dog, is he? What about you, Ness? You don't have all three of them in bed, do you?
They're in here with us, yeah.
So you must have a big bed.
Well, I'm here on the bed, just sitting on the bed, and there's three of them curled up in a ball.
Aww.
Hmm.
We should have a picture of that.
One of the studies that I looked at said that dogs are less disruptive sleep partners than another human.
I agree with that one.
But the cats are just as disruptive as humans.
No, cats aren't. My cat used to sleep on my head. He used to wrap his head himself around my head and sleep on my head.
I think the reason why people might say that about cats is because, like, my cat would always, like, lay between my legs, right? And then I felt like I couldn't move.
Yeah.
Like the whole night because my cat's there. So then I was trying to train her to lay in a different position. And then when she started laying up by my head, that was better. But when they kind of restrict your movement, I think that makes it hard.
Well, Pinky used to, the only problem with Pinky was he used to wrap around my head, but because he'd be like really happy and purry, he started to dribble. So he would dribble. Sometimes it would run down my face into my eye or into my ear. Oh, and it was gross. That was the only problem with Pinky. But other than that, it was good in winter because he used to keep my head warm.
Oh. Yeah, that's true. It's like a hat.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, yeah. And he liked to just reach out. Sometimes he would reach out a paw and like flop it over my head. But then because he'd be like in happy mode, his little claws would, you know, when cats are happy and they do the little claw thing and it would dig into my face. Yeah. But other than that, he wasn't disruptive at all.
Ernie sleeps in bed with us, but of course Ernie's only little and he's like a small hot brick. He just kind of like finds a body part and plonks himself on it and then just stays there and you can roll him off and you move. And then he just kind of like folds his legs up and drops back wherever you've moved to. He's much less disruptive than my husband.
Yeah.
Oh, snore.
Yeah. I think, yeah, that's what I was going to say. It depends on how much your partner snores, right?
Mine moves a lot in his sleep, so I get beaten up.
Yeah.
And he's fast asleep having a great old dream about something and I'm getting beaten up. So, Yeah. Give me a dog any day.
Dog's definitely less, oh, I can't even speak, definitely less disruptive.
The other thing that I get questions about is adult dog, like senior dogs who used to be able to sleep through the night, regardless of where they are. Even like if they're in the room, they used to be able to sleep through the night and now they're super restless. Do y'all get questions about that as well?
Not so much. I don't know about you, Ness. I mean, I'm just thinking if that's sundowning, but it's not. I mean, that's kind of like relative to the cognitive dysfunction, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think a lot of times the restless at night is related to, it's one of the major symptoms of cognitive dysfunction. So I think that, you know, if that's what you're seeing in your dog, that would be a good time to, and they're a senior, that's definitely a good time to go to the vet and just check in about that.
Yeah, for sure.
And again, I suppose it's another, with the seniors as well, it's a lot of movement in the night can be related to pain. So it might be worth making sure that the beds that they've got are comfortable enough and got enough padding for hips and bones and things like that. Yeah. And I think I remember something you said, I don't know if it was last week or the week before, Stacey, that you mentioned about temperature regulation. Mm-hmm. So, of course, a bit like humans, both puppies and adult old dogs can have trouble with temperature regulation. So them being on their own in the kitchen is probably not the best place make sure that they stay warm.
Well, and with both puppies and seniors, you have to think about having to use the bathroom in the middle of the night. You know, you might see an older dog kind of revert to having to go out more frequently.
And so, it's much easier if they're in the bedroom with you because you can hear them. Ernie was in the bedroom with us and he never had one single accident during the night because I could always hear him and take him out.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
And that makes life a lot easier, doesn't it, when you're not standing in anything on the way to the bathroom one morning.
Hey, what's the thing that will get you the quickest out of bed in the middle of the night?
Dog retching sound.
Yep. yes, you get out like a rocket.
Yeah.
Something I would like to talk about is you know, if people are coming up with reasons to not let your dog sleep in the bed with you, I think we should talk about this, even though it's not exactly separation. Well, it's not separation anxiety related, but people will say, oh, it causes aggression or dominance issues. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons you shouldn't let your dog sleep with you. For me, I don't agree with that statement. I think that is a separate issue. Certainly has nothing to do with separation anxiety, but it's a separate issue, and it comes down to your training outside of, you know, in the dog's whole life, not just in the bedroom, if you know what I mean.
I mean, this kind of gets us down the whole dominance rabbit hole, but if you're looking at dominance as a construct of who has control over the resources, letting the dog in your bed, just like letting them on furniture or giving them access to certain rooms or anything like that, is just sharing the resource. Like, it's a resource that you have control over that you are inviting your dog to be a part of. I've not seen that. That's never been an issue for me or any of my clients. I've not seen that be an issue.
I suppose there's the perception of a dog that's resource guarding a bed or a sofa, the perception of that being aggression rather than the based in fear of loss of a resource. And again, that comes down to, like Ness said, that comes down to, you know, training and teaching them that getting on and off furniture and beds and things is a good thing, not a bad thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, those are the two objections about dogs sleeping in bedrooms. Is one of them is it causes aggression or dominance issues, and the other one is it causes separation anxiety. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to kind of put both of them to bed. Did you see what I did there?
There was actually a study, forget which one it was. I can look it up. We can put it in the show notes about separation anxiety and the bed, and there not being a link there, mm-hmm. letting them sleep in your bed and there not being a link. I can't remember the name of this study, but there was a study about that.
That's helpful, Stacey.
Just to know that it's backed by research, not our opinions. That part might be helpful. Fine, I'll look it up.
Is it Monica Udell and someone else? That might have been the one about sleeping and separation anxiety. But yeah, so I mean the objections for letting your dog sleep in your bed are, you know, we can put those to bed, like you said, about the aggression and dominance and separation anxiety. Obviously, other issues which come down to personal issues are things like, you know, if you've got a great big hairy dog, you might not want them in bed because you don't want your bed covered in hair. You know, mm-hmm. things like that are their personal choice things. But if you're worried about the bigger stuff, the separation anxiety, then we can categorically state to you that it won't make any difference. In fact, if anything, it will just help your cause if you allow them to sleep in the same room.
Sarah, you did share a study with us about Indigenous Australians and co-sleeping. Do you want to tell us about that? I thought it was quite interesting because I didn't know this.
Yeah, the Australian in the group. So it was...
I'm not an Australian. I just want to make that clear.
Oh, sorry.
I'm quite offended. No, I'm not.
New Zealand-y body.
I'm a Kiwi.
It basically spoke about how it's a bit of a cultural thing and a bit of a bias that these days that we don't all sleep together anymore. So, you know, but years and years ago, we all used to sleep together, not just the animals, but whole families. You know, you'd have all the children would be in bed with you. And, you know, back in the day, the cow would be in the bedroom or the pig or whatever it was, you know, the animal that was the most precious or the most, I can't think of the right word now. But it talks about co-sleeping with Indigenous societies primarily used to involve humans, particularly children. It's likely to also have involved companion animals or pets. And the practice of pet keeping dates back to Paleolithic hunters and early agriculturalists. Glad I got that out. Who kept animals for leisure activities. And it's been widely recorded, apparently, in ethnographies of Indigenous Australians, that during cold nights, Indigenous Australians were often reported to sleep alongside their dogs for warmth. This practice is implicated in the common Australian expression, a three-dog night. The colder the night, the more dogs are needed to keep warm.
Mm.
So over here, I bet, Stacey, you must have at least five dog nights over there, don't you?
Actually, it doesn't get that cold here, like where I am in North Carolina. Because I'm not in the mountains. I'm kind of in between the mountains and the beach. So we don't get a ton of, I mean, we get some colder nights, but not too bad. Not anything like cold and dark and wet.
Mm. Yeah, cold and dark and wet and all that. Ness, does it get cold enough to have five dogs on the Barbie?
Not so much where I am, but yeah, down south it does. We get snow and stuff. So places like Tasmania and Victoria.
Yeah, so I mean, sleeping with your animals used to be something that was pretty common. It's only as we've developed as society and become more kind of like fractured, is that the right word? Or more, we tend to, I mean, we don't live together in communities like we used to either, do we?
No.
So the whole thing's changed. So, you know, 100 years ago, it would have been quite common to have your dog in the bedroom with you because you needed to keep it safe and it kept you warm. What are you looking for, Stacey? For our dear listeners who can't see, Stacey's concentrating very, very, very.
I am concentrating because I know it's in the Ogata study, but I can't, like, find it exactly. It's one of those reviews of the studies, you know? And, it's the Sargasson one. That's kind of like a study of studies, like, where are we with separation anxiety, blah, blah, blah. And so I'm trying to find, she references a bunch of studies in her paper, like, by a bunch, I mean like 59. So I was trying to look for the exact study that talked about that, but I will find it. It is in this study. I know it's in the study, like I can see it in my head. I just can't like locate it in the actual study. But that's why I had concentration face on, because I was concentrating.
Fair
enough. Only the best for our listeners. Oh, there were some also studies that I found about how after stressful experiences, dogs had, let me find that one. It was kind of like after stressful experiences, dogs slept longer, but they had more REM sleep. So not as much of the deep sleep. And they're thinking the REM sleep is the stage of sleep where you process emotions. And so I thought that was interesting.
There's but the other that they side. Slept,
so it, they call it being less efficient in your sleeping, right? Because there's not as much of the deep sleep.
So REM is rapid eye movement, isn't it? REM. Mm-hmm.
So there's another flip side of that with the dogs sleeping more is the common side effect of medication when we're in separation anxiety. And with medication, quite often you get owners that are worried because suddenly the dogs seem to be sleeping a lot more. And when you dig deeper into that, what you quite often find with dogs that live at this kind of like higher level of anxiety is that you find out that they're only sleeping 4 or 5 hours a day, whereas your average adult dog can sleep around 18 hours a day. Mm-hmm. And then you realize that suddenly that these dogs have been constantly active. And once they're on the medication, not only does it help with the separation anxiety, but it also helps kind of normalize the sleeping patterns. So what the owners are seeing is more normal behavior as opposed to what they think it is, which is lethargy due to medication.
Right. Yes, I totally agree with that.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it?
And you see that quite a lot, that you don't realize how much their dogs are on the move until they suddenly mention that, you know, they're not doing as much. And then when you dig deeper and you find out that, yeah, they never stop.
Then there's the whole thing about the effect of sleep and kind of memory consolidation and learning. And so it's just really, I think we talk about the importance of sleep for us, right? I think that we understand that sleep is important so that our cognitive function we're at the top of our game, and so that we stay well. And there's even links. I don't know. I haven't seen a study in dogs, but in people about weight gain and sleep. If you're not getting enough sleep, you're more likely to gain or hold on to weight or gain weight. And so there's like a lot of importance. And we talk about the importance of sleep, especially if we're feeling anxious or depressed, or, you know, those are the first, you know, are you getting enough sleep? Is your diet good? Are you getting exercise? That's what somebody trying to help you through that would talk about. but we don't think about sleep as much, I think, for our dogs sometimes.
No. And when you think, I mean, they used to use sleep deprivation as a form of torture, didn't they?
I was reading somewhere, but I hesitate to even remark about this because Ness will get on me for not having this study at my fingertips. But I was reading somewhere that it was on a podcast. Maybe I could find it. It was on not one of our podcasts.
Another one.
I know. It's like I listen to other podcasts. Could you imagine? But they were talking about how a dog can last longer without food and maybe water. I can't remember the water part, but then sleep, like sleep deprivation was more damaging than either of not having either one of those two. So I was just thinking that. Then I was going back and looking at, this is a rabbit hole I went down. Then I was going back and looking at like the hierarchy of things that you should provide your dog. What is that called?
Is that the hierarchy of needs? Is that that one? Or you're thinking yes. of someone something
else? Yes, I am thinking of that. And it doesn't talk about sleep. It talks about hunger and thirst and stuff like that. But I just thought that was interesting going back and looking at that. I guess not many people deprive their dog of sleep knowingly, or I don't know.
It does make you wonder though, doesn't it? I mean, how much, you know, when you think about in an ideal world that we should sleep, I don't know, 7-8 hours a night, it makes you wonder how many hours you know, is there a study that says how many hours your dog should sleep a night?
Well, it's interesting because I started to look at a study called, let me find it, a functional linear modeling approach to sleep-wake cycles in dogs by Woods et al. I like that name, easy to pronounce, right up my alley. And so I was looking at that to find that piece of information, Sarah, like what is normal-ish, because, you know, from like a learning perspective for me, like I hear anything between like, well, there's a range, right? But 15 to 20 hours, you know, depending on the dog and the breed and the age and all of that. And that study talked about the cycles a lot, as the name would suggest. But, and honestly, I didn't get through the whole thing because it was very long, And I got a little bit distracted with other more shiny objects. but when I was trying to go through to find that bit of information, I could not. So I don't know if, I would imagine they would have collected that if they were looking at the sleep cycles, that they would have looked at the length as well, but I could not find where they said that. So I'll look at it a little more. And if I find that, I'll let you know.
Because it always seems to me that my dogs sleep more during the night. You know, they go to bed and I don't hear them get up again until morning.
Yeah.
And Ernie actually asks to go to bed, around now. He'll be wandering around outside going, it's bedtime.
Yeah, Rowan is the same way. He'll put himself in his bed in our room when he's ready to go to bed.
Our listeners who've just got that puppy, what's our advice to them? What should they do with it first night, first week?
Put it in the bedroom. You look, don't necessarily have to have it on the bed, but I would at least have it by the bed, maybe in a crate or, you know.
Yeah.
Especially for the toileting, so you know when they need to get up. I mean, when Chase was a puppy, she was down by my bed in a little puppy crate. And she would sleep, but as soon as she woke up, I'm like, right, let's go outside for wee. So I didn't have any accidents in the house. So it was good for that too.
Yeah, I think it's major for that. And I think a lot of, if you're getting your puppy from a breeder, a lot of breeders do, maybe a lot is too strong. Some breeders work on crate training. So acclimating the puppy to a crate. And if that's the case, then that transition will be a bit easier for your puppy. But putting the crate right next to the bed and, you know, you can just kind of hang your hand down or touch the crate when, if your puppy starts getting a bit unsettled, that can be helpful. If the breeder hasn't done that legwork for you, then that's a good thing for you to work on, is just a crate training plan to help make the crate a positive place. And then, or if it's a rescue, same thing.
What about the other question that we get asked a lot, which is my puppy has slept in a crate for the last 4 months, 5 months, and now suddenly is waking up in the middle of the night every night.
Yeah. So I really get that like between 5 and 7 months, I seem to get that. Like, I don't know if it has anything to do with sexual maturity, like maybe some changes going on, because that's kind of like the time when they're having some changes there. So I kind of wonder about that, but I don't know. And I definitely haven't read any studies on that. So that is just like kind of me wondering if that line, because the timing kind of lines up. But for me, it's one of those things that we might not understand why, but we know they can't handle it anymore, right? So we have to drop back to what they can do. And then if it's a goal of yours to help them become more independent again and to be able to sleep separately or, you know, whatever the situation is, then you can work towards that again, but kind of starting back to what can they comfortably do now? And that's probably sleep in your room, whether that's a crate or a dog bed or whatever. I don't know. What do you guys think?
It's a funny one, isn't it? Because it is something that I see a lot with, like you say, that between sort of like 5, 7 months ish. And I suppose basically we need somebody to do a study on this one, because we're in the perfect place to do it. Because at the moment, I mean, it is very anecdotal, and you know, I can say that I see this a lot, and it does seem quite common, and it does just seem to be suddenly they just can't stay in that crate. And I, you know, anecdotally, I've got the same thing. Ernie was the same. He slept in a crate every night until he hit about 6 months old, and then that was it. If I took him out, I couldn't get him back in it. So in the end, he slept on the bed, and he's been there ever since.
He trained you well.
Yes,
I think I think something we should be mindful of too is that dogs, we know they're social animals, but they are also social sleepers. So, and that may get back to the way that we have developed them.
There was a nice phrase that I heard this week, and I can't remember where I heard it from, where they were referred to as captive companions.
Oh,
so they are our companions, but they didn't choose to be with us. We chose to domesticate them and to try and mold them into to fit our needs and demands and everything, but they didn't choose to be with us. So it's kind of like it would behoove us to try and think a little bit more about the fact that they didn't choose to be here. So, you know, we need to give them a little bit more leeway. But that the captive companions thing, I thought was quite an interesting phrase.
But yeah, I mean, they have been used to sleeping with us, as you were saying, Sarah. So, yeah, it's kind of not weird that they should continue to.
Listening to our wonderful episode all about sleep. So in some nation, basically, if you let your dog sleep in your bedroom or on your bed, it's not going to make your separation anxiety or your dog's separation anxiety any worse. In fact, if anything, you might just give them a little bit more confidence and a little bit more comfort going forward. So you've been listening to me, Sarah McLaren, in the UK, from Separation Anxiety Solutions. You can find me on Facebook and on my Facebook page, www.separationanxietysolutions.com.
And I am Stacey Bell in the US at Focused Fun. You can find me at Focused Fun Dogs on Facebook and Instagram, and my website is focusedfun.net.
And I'm Ness Jones. I'm in Australia. I'm from Separation Anxiety in Dogs Decoded. You have been listening to Tales from the Doghouse, Separation Anxiety Explained, and you can find us on Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, and other great listening apps. We shall see you next week.
Bye. Thank you.